from deep inside your radio.
When did it start? 22 years ago today? Somebody just mailed me a reminder of that. This broadcast. I didn't even remember, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know what that is, but I didn't remember until somebody emailed me a reminder. And it wasn't me or anybody in my carass that this broadcast is now beginning its 22nd, 23rd? I don't know how to count these things. Wait a minute. Anyway, we started 22 years ago. We got a frog in your pocket? And now I'm talking to myself. Yes, so anyway, that's that. That's that out of the way. And harder to get out of the way, ladies and gentlemen, is this. The flood wall on the 17th Street Canal in New Orleans, Louisiana, was destined to fail long before it reached its maximum design load of 14 feet of water, because the United States Army Corps of Engineers underestimated the impact of the weak soil layer from 10 to 15 feet below the levee. That's according to Louisiana's official forensic levee investigation team. Team Louisiana. The miscalculation was so obvious and fundamental, investigators said they, quote, could not fathom, unquote, and no pun intended, how the design team of engineers from the Corps of Engineers, as well as two engineering firms, Eustis Engineering and Mojeski and Masters, could have missed what is now being termed the costliest engineering mistake in American history. And we're living through history. You don't have to line up for it. It's right here all the time. The failure of the wall and other breaches in the levee system flooded much of New Orleans, prompting investigations that have raised questions about the basic design and construction of the walls. It's simply beyond me, says Billy Prochaska, a consulting engineer in Team Louisiana. Going on, he says, quote, this wasn't a complicated problem. This is something the Corps, Eustis, and Mojeski and Masters do all the time. Yet everyone missed it, everyone from the local offices all the way up to Washington, unquote. Team Louisiana, LSU professors and independent engineers reached to conclusions by plugging soil strength data available to the Corps into the engineering equations used in blah, 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 blah. Our research, says LSU professor Ivar van Heerden, our research shows it would fail at water levels between 11 and 12 feet, which is just what happened in the wake of Katrina. Several high-level academic and professional investigations previously, have you heard of this on the radio, by the way? Good. Had found the sheet piling used in the design to support the flood walls was too short for the 18.5-foot depth of the canal. Team Louisiana recently, but the Corps has long claimed the sheet piling was driven to 17.5 feet below ground. Team Louisiana recently used sophisticated ground sonar to prove it was only 10 feet deep. And the Corps this week now acknowledged that that may have been true. Investigators have been puzzled by the Corps' design since it was made public in press reports. They said it was obvious the weak soils and the former swampland upon which the canal and levee were built clearly called for piles driven much deeper than the canal bottom. It was not a challenging engineering problem, investigators said. It kind of boggles the mind that they missed this, says Prochaska, because it's so basic and there were so many qualified engineers working on this, unquote. Says Robert B., the University of California Berkeley professor who led the National Science Foundation investigation, the mistakes made by the engineers on the project were hard to accept because the project was so, quote, straightforward. It's hard to understand because it seemed so simple and because the failure has become so large, unquote, Professor B. And he concludes, this is the largest civil engineering disaster in the history of the United States, unquote. Maybe that's criminal engineering then, Professor. I don't know. When does it cross the line? But just proving that failing upward doesn't only happen in Hollywood. Stories this week about the controversy over whether New Orleans is safe. That is to say, whether there are toxic substances in the air and the soil that endanger people returning. I'm fine. I'm fine. Tom Coleman of the Environmental Protection Agency says that his agency and the groups, the citizen groups, agree on the data, just disagree on the interpretation of the data as to its effect on human health. But asked how much cleanup would be needed by the New York Times, Coleman said the determination would be made by FEMA and the Army Corps of Engineers. You can't fail out of that business. Hello, welcome to the show.
Yeah. bem pra misturar juízo e carnaval. Vem trair a solidão. Vem pra separar o lado bom do mal e acalmar meu coração. Vem pra me tirar o escuro e a sensação de que o inferno é por aqui. Vem pra se arrumar na minha confusão. Vem querendo ser feliz. Vem pra misturar juízo e carnaval. Vem trair a solidão. Vem pra separar o lado bom do mal e acalmar meu coração. Vem pra me tirar o escuro e a sensação de que o inferno é por aqui. Vem pra se arrumar na minha confusão. Vem querendo ser feliz. Sensação de que o inferno é por aqui. Vem pra se arrumar na minha confusão. Vem querendo ser feliz.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, back where it all started. He said, well, really across the street from where it all started. 22 years ago, I thought I wasn't going to mention that again, and I did. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this anniversary edition of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, one thing, I don't know if you're considering your job prospects for the new year, one thing you don't want to be, if you go to work for the Al-Qaeda people, you don't want to be their number three man. You really, here we go. I'll elucidate. Dateline Thursday, May 5, 2005. The alleged number three man in Al-Qaeda has been captured in northwest Pakistan. Pakistani and U.S. officials said. Dateline Dubai, May 9th. Abu al-Faraj al-Libi, the alleged Al-Qaeda leader arrested in Pakistan, is not the terror network's number three, according to European Secret Service sources. Dateline Sunday, March 2, 2003, top Al-Qaeda leader Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was among three suspected members of the terror network arrested in Pakistan. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the story continues, is described by Australia's Prime Minister John Howard as a huge catch. I'm told, Prime Minister Howard said, I'm told by people who know that he is really a big catch. He is the number three person. Dateline, March 3, 2003. The joint United States-Pakistani swoop on the hideout of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is the most serious blow so far to the organization, a man described by some analysts as Al-Qaeda's number three. Dateline this week. Islamabad, Pakistan. The operational commander of Al-Qaeda and possibly the number three official in the terrorist organization, Hamza Rabia, was killed early Thursday morning by a CIA missile attack on a safe house in Pakistan, officials told NBC News. You do not want to be Al-Qaeda's number three. It's almost like that's the guy they set up to take the hit. Or maybe there's another explanation. But anyway, if President Bush had only said during his announcement of our strategy for victory plan this week that we are going to wipe out every number three man Al-Qaeda has, then you see, we're making progress. We're making good progress. Don't be the nut. When the Al-Qaeda recruiter calls, says, I got a job for you, just ask one question. Is it the number 3? Because if so, I'm otherwise occupied. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get scared. Because we can. Enough plutonium to make dozens of nuclear bombs hasn't been accounted for. Where? In Iraq? In Russia? At the Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico, run by the University of California. Hey, Bruins. Hey, Bears. It may be missing. So according to an activist group, there's no evidence that the weapons-grade plutonium has been stolen or diverted, the Institute for Energy and Environmental Research said in their, to be fair, disclaimer. However, the amount unaccounted for, more than 600 pounds, and possibly several times that, is so great that it raises a vast security issue. A spokesman for UC did not address the report's specifics, but said the New Mexico lab tracks nuclear material, quote, to a minute quantity, unquote. So let's not be scared. Because it doesn't do any good, really, and otherwise, you know, we just get scared. Now, ladies and gentlemen, another story that may have escaped your attention. In all the controversy about the planting of stories by the Pentagon in the Iraqi press, we'll get to more of that moments from now. But Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's administration violated state law by producing fake news videos touting his proposals to soften an array of pro-labor laws. That's according to a judge's ruling this Thursday. These judges are out of control. Superior Court judge ordered Schwarzenegger refrain from producing and distributing the videos. I just want to direct, and fake news videos were all that were... He did not say that. He ruled that state law bars officials from using tax money to pay for one-sided releases, particularly when they advocate pending proposals to alter state laws. Schwarzenegger's officials responded by removing two so-called video news releases from the state website, but Yehan Flagg, spokesperson, said the administration may appeal. I think I blame John Stewart. I do. He started the whole trend toward fake news, and the Bush administration, Arnold Schwarzenegger, just want to be as popular as John Stewart. That's my theory, and I'm sticking to it. Now, ladies and gentlemen, here's something you may not have heard this week. This from the BBC.
Would you like to take this opportunity to apologize to your readers for the mistakes you made?
I am obviously deeply chagrined that I ever write anything that turns out to be incorrect. And I'm deeply sorry that the stories were wrong. I'm deeply sorry our intelligence community got it wrong. I'm deeply sorry that the president was given a national intelligence estimate which concluded that Saddam Hussein had biological and chemical weapons and an active weapons program. I think it's a terrible failure. It's a shocking failure. It's a deeply troubling failure, because if we don't know, if we didn't know about Iraq, what do we really know about the programs of Iran or North Korea or Syria or what Al-Qaeda is up to?
Oh, man, Judy Miller now wondering about stuff like that. A fabulous introduction to the Apologies of the Week.
We're so sorry.
What do we know indeed? You know what? I say send the Army Corps of Engineers over there. They'll find out. Meanwhile, former Secretary of State Colin Powell's chief of staff... No, this is not an apology. Excuse me. 22 years doing this, ladies and gentlemen. U.S. Representative Bobby Rush hasn't paid his mortgage since July. He's a Democrat from Illinois, according to a lawsuit filed Monday. Now, a bank has filed to foreclose on his Southside home. But Bobby is in this feature because he's not apologetic. In a statement issued through a spokeswoman, he said, over the past 3 years, I've used considerable personal assets in building a church. I do not apologize. As with any worthwhile endeavor of this magnitude, personal sacrifices must be made. Unquote. Personal sacrifice apparently includes not paying his mortgage. Dateline Lawrence, Kansas, a University of Kansas religion professor, apologized this week for a recent email that infuriated religious conservatives already upset about his decision to teach a course that equates intelligent design with mythology. Faculty approved the course this week but dropped the reference to mythology. In the email, Paul Marecki, chairman of the university's religious studies department, called supporters of the teaching of intelligent design and creationism religious fundies, and said it would be a nice slap in their big fat face to teach the subject as mythology. In a written apology, the professor said he will teach the class as a serious academic subject and in a manner that respects all points of view. But those were good reprogramming sessions for the professor. Dateline Boston Chief Justice Margaret Marshall, author of the landmark ruling legalizing gay marriage in Massachusetts, this week apologized for a remark she made about red states during a commencement speech at Brandeis. This resolves a citizen complaint filed against her with the Judicial Conduct Commission. In greeting the audience at Brandeis, Marshall commented on the hundreds of blue and white balloons held in nets tied to the rafters. "No red states here," she said. In her apology this week, she said she regretted making the comment about red states. She called it an unconsidered, spontaneous attempt to connect with the exuberant, celebratory feeling in the audience reflecting the balloons I had seen. The reference to red states was not part of my written prepared speech. I regret the comment, and I apologize for it. No ad-libbing. And how many times do I have to tell you guys? Dateline Las Cruces, New Mexico. The state Supreme Court has been asked to reprimand a judge accused of improper involvement in a public drinking case against his son and belittling an attorney in court. Judge Larry Ramirez has already completed an ethics course and paid $1,500 to the commission. He acknowledged that his actions could be viewed as an attempt to use his job to influence court proceedings involving his son. Quote, "At no time did I seek any preferential treatment or exert any undue influence on anyone. If my actions created an appearance of impropriety, I apologize. I intended no harm," he said. Also, on the subject of judges, and one of the harshest punishments that's ever handed down, the Massachusetts Commission on Judicial Conduct suspended a Plymouth County judge for a year without pay for sexually harassing two female court workers. The commission also fined him $50,000 and barred him from ever sitting in any court in the county. "You can stand, however, sir." Plymouth Juvenile Court Judge Robert Murray agreed to the punishment and apologized to the court officer and the court clerk. "I'm very sorry for the pain, anguish, and apprehension I caused both in court employees," he said. "I'm very sorry for the embarrassment and expense of the trial court, and I apologize to my judicial colleagues for what I have done. I've already apologized to my family for the pain and anguish that has resulted from this period of my life." Walmart has apologized to a black man who was accused of trying to pass a bad check as he was buying thousands of dollars in holiday gift cards to distribute to his company's employees. Employees at a Walmart called deputies last week to apprehend Reginald Pitts after he handed over a $13,600 check to pay for the cards that were to be given to employees at GAF Materials, a roofing manufacturer where Pitts is a human resources manager. The company, which had $1.6 billion in revenue last year, has been spending about $50,000 a year on Walmart gift cards. Never had a problem when it sent a white employee to pick them up. This happened in Florida. Walmart has launched an internal investigation of the incident and apologized to Pitts. "We probably could have handled it better, but I won't know until we complete the investigation," Walmart spokeswoman Sharon Weber says. "I'd send the Corps of Engineers in to investigate, because they..." Dateline Washington, the United States says Venezuela has apologized for not allowing a U.S. congressional delegation to enter the country. Caracas denies that assertion. No, we'll leave that where it is. Eagle Mountain, Utah is a burgeoning Utah County community full of young families, new homeowners, and, according to the Salt Lake Tribune, white people. The racial breakdown of Eagle Mountain was listed as a selling point on the website of home builder Big, with two G's, Homes, with no L. The site also included this comparison, among others: black race population percentage significantly below state average, significantly below was in boldface type. David Adams, co-owner of Big Homes, removed the information from the site after being contacted by the Salt Lake City Tribune this week. "We apologize if that offended anybody. It wasn't our intention," he said. "Frankly, it is offensive to me, too." Adams said the information didn't come from his company. A web designer contracted to build the Rig Homes website copied information from another internet address, according to Adams. He offended himself, ladies and gentlemen. That's worth apologizing for. Dateline Kansas City, three employees of the Clay County Sheriff's Department were suspended without pay for sending a pornographic email to other county employees. How often does this happen? The email contained a sexually graphic cartoon of a snowman. Deputy sent the email from his home computer to his computer at the sheriff's office. The deputy then forwarded the email, blah, blah, blah. Sheriff apologized to those employees who received the email. I am expecting him to apologize to those who didn't in a matter of moments. The University of Richmond's Board of Trustees agreed not to fire the university's president after he sparked an uproar by insulting alumni and students as mush. During a State of the University address, William Cooper discussed efforts to make the school more academically competitive. The entering quality of our student body needs to be much higher if we're going to transform bright minds into great achievers instead of transforming mush into mush. And I mean it, he said in this speech. He later apologized and said his remarks were misinterpreted. I did no interpreting. That's my contribution. And I believe, ladies and gentlemen, oh, no, and Congressman Randy Duke Cunningham. Oh, and we got a couple more. We got Russia getting an apology from China for the spill in the river, a spill of benzene drifting down a river from neighboring China, Amur River in Russia. China's government apologized to Russia for the situation, although Chinese authorities were criticized for the delay in acknowledging that an explosion caused nearly 100 tons of benzene to pour into the river. And San Diego County Congressman Randy Duke Cunningham resigned in disgrace this week after admitting he took more than $2.4 million in bribes to help defense contractors land lucrative government contracts. This was a crime of unprecedented magnitude and extraordinary audacity, said the U.S. attorney prosecuting the case against the haggard-looking Vietnam War fighter ace. I broke the law, concealed my conduct, and disgraced my high office, Cunningham said. I know that I will forfeit my freedom, my reputation, my worldly possessions, and most importantly, the trust of friends and family, he said, pausing to wipe away tears. I was not strong enough to face the truth. I misled my family, staff, colleagues, the public, even myself. He misled himself, ladies and gentlemen. Worse than the guy who offended himself. Duke Cunningham misled himself. For all of this, he concludes, I am deeply sorry. What did Duke Cunningham do with the money? $200,000 went to the purchase of his Arlington, Virginia condominium. $140,000 for the Dukester yacht, which was moved to his boat slip for his use. $12,000 paid to an antique store for three nightstands. Three nightstands at an antique store. Man, that's cheap for 12. A leaded glass cabinet, a washstand, a buffet, and two armoires. $7,200 paid to an antique store for a 1850 Louis Philippe period commode. $13,500 toward the purchase of a Rolls Royce. $17,900 for repairs to the Rolls Royce. $11,000 to move his belongings from his Arlington condominium to his San Diego home. $2,000 to a Washington, D.C. hotel for his daughter's graduation party. $9,200 for two laser shot shooting simulators. And hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash to him and a company he controlled that apparently he also misled. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Giant steps I watch you take, walking on the moon. God, I hope my legs don't break when I'm walking on the moon. We could walk forever, walking on the moon. And we could live together, walking on, walking on the moon. Walking back from your house, and I'm walking on the moon. From your house, and I'm walking on the moon. walking on the moon. And some may say I'm wishing my days away, away. And if it's the price that I pay, some say tomorrow's another day. You stay, I may as well play. Giant steps I want you to take, and I'm walking on, I'm walking the
This is Le Show, now in its 20-something year of something. And ladies and gentlemen, you know I was in New Orleans last week. The show originated from New Orleans last week, and it really is two cities at this point in time. The populated strip, which is brimming with life, resilience, and defiance, and the depopulated swath, which is silent and lifeless. And all the discussion, all the to-ing and fro-ing, all the finger-pointing, all the document dumping. You notice that this weekend, the Louisiana governor's office delivered itself of thousands of pages of documents, emails, handwritten notes from the period before, just before and just after the hurricane to the Senate and House committees investigating the situation. And some of it looks political, and some of it looks like they were confused, and some of it looks like they were trying to request help. And some of it looks like there was a dispute between the governor of Louisiana and the president of the United States, which started out with the governor requesting federal troops. Well, requesting everything you've got, in her words, to the president of the United States. I guess he interpreted that as what he had on him. And devolved into a dispute over whether the National Guard troops from many states, including Louisiana, that were dispatched to the scene, should be federalized. Now, the documents released by the governor make it apparent that her motive in resisting that was that if they were federalized, they probably could not engage in law enforcement activities, which was one of the main reasons she wanted National Guard troops in New Orleans to begin with. We don't know yet what the president's motive was for trying to insist on federalizing the guardsmen and women. Hey, gals. So, story to be continued. But as you know, if you've been following along with me at Eat the Press at www.huffingtonpost.com, what intrigues me most at this point in time about all the story of New Orleans in the aftermath of Katrina is that it's treated as a hurricane story. Now, what happened in Mississippi from Katrina was a hurricane story. What happened in Texas from Rita, Texas and southwest Louisiana, was a hurricane story. What happened from Wilma in Florida was a hurricane story. But as indicated by what I shared with you at the top of the program, regarding the largest civil engineering disaster in American history, what happened to New Orleans was not a natural disaster. And that fact has been reported for in bits and pieces as reports have come out for more than a month by the local New Orleans newspaper. Only this week did the New York Times break the silence of the national media in announcing that, yeah, there were indications that this was a man-made disaster. And the proximate cause of the New York Times covering it was not the issuance of another report by investigators, but the admission by the Army Corps of Engineers that, yeah, they may be right. So the guilty plea is what got the news. But just as you're watching television or reading the papers in the next few days, and you see any Katrina coverage, any New Orleans coverage, check to see how they describe what happened in New Orleans. It might make a difference in the willingness of Congress people to put up the money to repair the damage that federal people inflicted on the city, don't you think? Yeah, me too. And now, ladies and gentlemen, another exclusive feature of the broadcast, news from outside the bubble. Former Secretary of State Colin Powell's chief of staff, Lawrence Wilkerson, says President Bush was too aloof, too distant from the details of post-war planning. That's not outside the bubble. That was in an Associated Press interview that Wilkerson had this week. He says Dick Cheney must have sincerely believed Iraq could be a spawning ground for new terror assaults because, quote, otherwise I have to declare him a moron, an idiot, or a nefarious bastard, unquote. That was not outside the bubble. What was outside the bubble was the fact that Wilkerson gave an interview at the same time to the BBC where he said in answer to a question that Dick Cheney may, in fact, be a war criminal. Ukraine has begun the withdrawal of its troops from Iraq with the pulling out of 69 soldiers. It's the coalition of the cutting and the running. The remaining 858 Ukrainian soldiers are due to leave by the end of this month. Attacks on Iraqi forces are frequent, but the soldiers do not have the armored Humvees, Bradley fighting vehicles, or tanks that are capable of withstanding bullets and some blasts, according to the Pakistan Daily Times. Equipped with little or no ammunition, the Iraqi army soldiers can often be seen wearing balaclavas and toting AK-47 rifles as they ride around in the back of Nissan trucks. U.S. officials frequently praise the new army's progress, but telling details from daily operations show the force still has a long way to go. But apparently the equipment situation is something that we're dealing with. Of course we are. U.S. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld has decided to avoid using the word insurgent to describe the Iraqis fighting. This was after he tried earlier this year to change the name of the global war on terror to something else. I thought to myself, you know, that gives them greater legitimacy than they seem to merit, he said, describing his epiphany over the weekend. Why would you call these people insurgents? According to Agence France-Presse, Webster's defines insurgency as a condition of revolt against a legitimate government, not reaching the proportions of an organized revolutionary government and not recognized as a belligerency. Maybe he's right. Legitimate government. The success of British colonial forces against the Malay Rebellion in the 1950s is being commended in the United States as a template for victory in Iraq, according to the British newspaper The Telegraph. Colonel Andrew Krepinevich, a Vietnam veteran, has been touring congressional offices, the Pentagon, since autumn espousing an oil spot strategy. This week, President Bush all but formally endorsed a modified version of that approach. Rather than focus on hunting down the enemy, the American-led coalition forces should be concentrating on securing specific towns and making life so good there that no one will want to support the insurgents, Colonel Krepinevich argues. In time, the success will spread slowly outwards as if from an expanding oil spot or ink blot or splot, as happened in Malaya. You focus on a spot segment by segment, area by area, he says. Colonel Krepinevich described the reaction from generals. It has ranged from very interesting right on to don't worry, we're already doing this. He added, I guess the third reaction is, this is too late. Also from the Telegraph, Iraqis, this is not the first time you've heard this, but you haven't heard this often enough. Iraqis rather than foreign fighters now form the vast majority of the insurgents who are waging the guerrilla war against the United States, American commanders have revealed. Their conclusion disclosed, these are our commanders talking to the British newspaper, the Sunday Telegraph, in interviews over 10 days, contradicts the White House message that outsiders are the principal enemy in Iraq. Of the 1,300 suspected insurgents arrested over the past 5 months in and around Ramadi, a town we, I believe, liberated three times and is now allegedly under insurgent control once again, none has been a foreigner, according to the Telegraph. The senior officer in the town said almost all insurgent fighting there was by Iraqis. Foreigners provided only money and logistical support. The foreign fighters are staying north of the Euphrates River, training and advising like the Soviets were doing in Vietnam, says the commander, Colonel John Gronsky, introducing an interesting Vietnam comparison. Ladies and gentlemen, you know U.S. Army officers have been secretly paying Iraqi journalists to produce upbeat newspaper, television, and radio reports about American military operations. It would be illegal if such reports were being paid for by the Pentagon to be broadcast or printed in this country. But the U.S. public is at risk, says Knight Ridder Newspapers, of being influenced by the information ops, because what is planted in the Iraqi media could be picked up by international news organizations and bloggers. There is no local media anymore, says a senior military official in Baghdad who has knowledge of American psyops in Iraq. All media is potentially international. The web makes it all public. We need to eliminate the idea that psychological operations and information operations can issue any kind of information to the media, ever, period, unquote. The U.S. Central Intelligence Agency has been granted full access to Britain's military airfields to transport terrorist suspects, according to the British newspaper The Mail on Sunday. A series of aircraft linked to the CIA's extraordinary rendition program have been flying in and out of Britain unchecked by the authorities, says The Mail. On Sunday, and in a related matter, the U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is expected to give allies in Europe a response to their pressure about Washington's treatment of terrorism suspects. The EU is upset about both the black prison sites, so-called, run by the CIA in unnamed Eastern European countries, reportedly Poland and Romania, and about these rendition flights where planes taking alleged terrorists away to Egypt or Syria to be interrogated without torture. The EU is protesting both of these, and the message Condoleezza Rice is bringing? Back off. The European Union has demanded Washington deal with the allegations to allay fears of illegal practices. The concerns are rampant among the European public and parliaments. Rice now reportedly will go on the offensive when she visits Europe, in a strategy that has been tested by her spokesman in public and in her private meetings with European visitors. Rice has been largely silent about detainees and has had an unusually low profile in Washington during the scandal. On this trip, she will remind allies they have been cooperating in U.S. operations and tell them to do more to win over the publics in their countries to deflect criticism directed at the U.S., says a European diplomat who has contact with U.S. officials. They were stuck on the defensive for weeks, but suddenly the line has toughened up incredibly. Wonder why? May have to look beneath the surface, don't you think?
Next, intimate tales of America's first underground vice president, the action-packed diary of the man who's just a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney. Confidential.
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 There are times of the year, spring, summer, early fall, late winter, when a guy's got to get out of the secure and disclosed location if he doesn't want to become crucially disconnected with facts upstairs on the ground. But as that hippie song, Turn, 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 said it best, there's also a season for staying in the secure and disclosed. The icy winds of late fall are one reason. So is the bad weather. Any neighborhood has its bad guys, and Washington, D.C. has the Democrats. Apparently they were intoxicated by a momentary lack of fear of seeming soft on terrorism, and our poll numbers were taking a worse beating than the clients of the Abu Ghraib night shift. The brain trust at Oval, Carl, Andy, Karen, assigned me to a little account called Public Pushback. But, and I hate false modesty, I've never done my best work in the glare of the spotlight, or for that matter in the light of day. So while Lynn supervised the Navy SEALs busy decorating the tree in the front compartment, I was in my private space, licking some wounds and planning some strategy with my old cabal mate from the Pentagon-shaped complex, Donnie the Rum. It was a peculiar tonic for the soul. Compared to Donnie, even my mood seemed sunny. Friday, 3:17 p.m.
You see, Dick, here's my problem. Mm-hmm. I'm fine with the plan as far as it goes. Mm-hmm. Pull our troops out and attack the hell out of anyone calling it a pullout. Sure, but don't we get to a point about the mid-non-pullout phase where we're too weak to defend ourselves? Isn't that what the dead-enders are waiting for?
Don't ask me, Donnie. I don't do uniforms. What do you think?
I don't know, and I don't know what I don't know.
Well, my friend, here's what I know. Next time you guys want to get stuff in the Iraqi newspapers, buy some friggin' ads. It's one thing to look bad at governing, but when we look like amateurs at public relations, might as well fold the shingle and shut up shop.
Look, Dick, maybe you don't have half the people under you holding secret conversations with Seymour Hersh, but I do. That I do know. Those are the wheels I'm trying to keep on the wagon.
Yes, sir. And all I've got is Colin's ex-chief of staff calling me a war criminal, fitting me for a Hague jumpsuit, while Andy and Carl are freezing me out of the new passwords, so...
Mr. Vice President, Secretary Rice to see you.
Thanks, Admiral. Donnie, make with a scram.
Okay, but...
Look, if I wanted butts, I wouldn't have married Lynn.
I got you.
Okay, Admiral. Send her in.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Vice President, I hope I'm neither early nor late.
And then she walked in. Her hair was flipped harder than a Ukrainian pancake. Her lips were more sensuous than two nights in Vegas. And to top off the whole package, there was that come-hither gap between her two front teeth that could drive a grown man colorblind. Oh, Miss Condoleezza Rice had the whole package, all right. But I knew her little secret. Underneath all that hot sauce was a big pond of cold soup. Today, that soup was going to be stirred and shaken.
Mr. Vice President, did I just miss Secretary Rumsfeld? That's not your aquavelva I'm smelling.
Condi, if I were in the business of making the names of my guests public, Bob Woodward's name would have shown up on the White House visitor's log. I assume you'd prefer this little rendezvous to be similarly underdocumented.
I appreciate the assumption.
I'd invite you to sit down, even if I didn't want to see you cross your legs.
Thank you.
So, you're off to Europe.
Matter of fact, I am. Seems there's a little fire there that needs putting out, and I'm the administration's first responder.
Well, anything that shuts the breeder's yaps gets my instant respect.
Well, you're not going to like this, Mr. Vice President, but I think I have to do some pretty heavy listening while I'm over there.
Oh, are brave friends and allies upset over the pictures on the Euro again?
I'm afraid not. They're more than a little upset about the black prison sites.
Strange, Condi.
What's that?
Hearing you say the word black as if it's a bad thing.
The countries where we have the black sites are embarrassed. The countries where we've refueled extraordinary rendition flights are embarrassed.
You know, here we've been working all this time on bird flu. Mm-hmm. Seems to me like we got a pandemic of embarrassment on our hands.
I know it doesn't mean all that much to you, but I have spent the last few months painstakingly repairing our relationships with the European nations. Mm-hmm. Relationships damaged rather badly by your friend and mine, Aquavelva Boy. It's important to us all that that hard work doesn't go down the torture toy-toy.
Candy, I see why the president likes you so much. You're like a Barbara Bush who can play the piano. Now look, it breaks my secure and disclosed heart that you've spent 7 months holding the hands of timorous tea-sippers. I've been running the Iraq account for years, and all that hard work is jeopardized by, among other things, this whining from the peanut gallery. Now look, here are your talking points for the European trip, Miss Rice.
Dick, we can't continue to treat our closest allies like hicks at a carnival ride. We can't just tell them, strap in and shut up.
They don't have to strap in. But you're right about one thing, Condi. We're not going to treat our closest allies like that. You are.
Dick, please, I'd lose all credibility if I go over there and defend torture.
It hasn't hurt my credibility any.
You're at 30%.
Exactly. It didn't drive me down to 20. As for losing all credibility, Miss Condi, what's the name of your position again?
Secretary of State.
Yeah, my reading of some recent history is that the credibility of that office is something we get to spend. You read the same history?
I have a slightly different relationship with the president than the previous occupant of this office. I'm willing to use it.
I like people who threaten me. It's a bracing feeling. Like Aquavelva in the morning. Condi, correct me if I'm wrong, but our base has never had its interest piqued by your status as a lifelong bachelorette, have they?
Your grammar's a little tortured, too. But you wouldn't go to the media with something that pathetic. That would really drive your credibility down to 20.
As you may have noticed, I don't say or do anything around here. That's why the good Lord made Scooter Libby and his successor. Although, I do owe Bob Woodward a call.
Dick, I must say, I think you're overplaying your hand here. The president isn't exactly beaming with satisfaction over your handling of the Iraq account.
No, I guess I'll just have to work a little harder to earn Monkey Boy's respect. Oh, excuse me, I misspoke. I meant Monkey Boy in chief. Well, Miss Rice, has it finally sunk in that around this shop, secretaries of state are expected to be good little soldiers? Because I have the feeling you look like a million in a uniform.
Dick, I'll hold the line, but I can't push back too hard. I just can't.
The elevator ride back up is a long one. I'm sure you'll use the time to think of a way to push back extra hard.
Just one move, Dick. In a long game.
Yep. Colin thinks he's still playing, too. Cigar for the road. Nothing beats the flavor of converted rice. Candy should know better than anyone that making friends can only take you so far. Then, you have to make some enemies. And a partial diary for early December 2005. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential.
Confidential.
Confidential. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, should you find yourself in Ann Arbor, Michigan Monday evening and want to see a fine evening of musical entertainment and some laughs as well, Judith Owen and Harry Shearer at the Ark at 8 p.m. in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Brrr! But that's going to conclude this edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz, channel 136 at Sirius Satellite Radio, available as a free download at www.audible.com/Lushow, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it would be just like trusting the Army Corps of Engineers if you'd agree to join with me, Dan. Would you already? Thank you very much, uh-huh. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. Beginning its 23rd year of disservice to the community, Le Show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.